So good morning. How are you, Todd?
I'm doing well, and yourself?
Fantastic. Welcome to the Collism interview series. So this is called Beyond Revenue, Bringing Purpose to Brand. And we are where conversations rounded in purpose give outdoor. So this is Todd Stockbauer, and Todd comes to us from Lafayette, Colorado. But before I dive into introducing Todd, I'd like to frame the conversation for our audience today. So Collism is all about purpose, and purpose-driven companies go beyond the role of offering product or service to develop programs that have a social or environmental impact. Social entrepreneurship is bringing more meaning to what businesses do. It's an exciting trend to explore. And if one wants to make a difference in their career and in their company, it's something to look into. We believe in the quadruple bottom line, which can be expressed as profit, people, planet, and purpose. So to introduce Todd today, Todd started Stockbauer and Associates in January of 2019 to provide financial, operational, and administrative cultural guidance and expertise to early stage and less mature companies. I can go into sort of the more of the details of that, but he focuses on consumer goods and the apparel, hard goods industry, including outdoor, winter, active lifestyle industries, retail, and alcohol beverage industry and food. So a plethora there. He's a seasoned business executive with significant expertise. He's worked as a C-level employee and consultant from startups all the way up to multinational operations. He understands personalities and the integration of operations and finance and the web that they weave together. So you may have noticed that Todd and I share the same target market, and thus that makes for terrific collaboration and masterminding together. We do know each other well, and yet I never know where their conversation is going to go. So I'm excited for today to share a little bit of Todd's personality on career experience. Three things I know about him. Todd always has chocolate milk before his coffee. Have you had your milk yet today, Todd?
I actually have had both chocolate milk and my coffee.
Okay, great. We're ready to go. I also know him as a Sphinx. He's kind of hard to find, doesn't have a big digital footprint, and yet that's the way he likes it. And he uses humor as a tool, levity in times of strife. So that gives you a little bit of the personality of Todd. So Todd, let's start with, I think everyone has a different definition of purpose. How do you define purpose?
Having looked at a couple of your other podcasts, I know you want this to come from me, which I will in a minute, but I'm a huge reader. And a couple of years ago, I read a book. It was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search of Meaning. And it had a profound effect on what I thought purpose was. And I'm going to paraphrase, read a little bit, just a couple of paragraphs, but it's really key to who I am and what I've done. And part of it is what was really needed was a fundamental change in our attitude towards life. We had to learn ourselves, and furthermore, we had to teach the despairing men that it did not really matter what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us. Our answer must consist in the right action and in the right conduct. Life ultimately means taking responsibility to find the right answer and its problems and to fulfill the task which it constantly sets for each individual. So that when I read that book, I actually have it in my phone, a couple other paragraphs, and it was so meaningful to me. And so when I looked at what purpose mean to me is what was meant, how can I give back? And so with us, with Stockbauer and Associates, myself, it's all about education. It's about giving back and who we are. We build brands through financial and operational guidance. And that became really important to our mission.
So it's beyond you.
It's well beyond. It's how can we as humanity extend our thoughts? And I'm a big fan of conscious capitalism. And look, I'm a capitalist at heart. I believe 100% you should make as much money as you can, but it's ultimately what good you do with that money. How do you give back to your employees? How do you give back to your customers, your vendors, the community that got you to where you were? It is simply, how do we have a purpose and how do we give back to those people who have got us to where we are?
And I always, I agree with you. And yet I always think when I hear give back, what do you think the difference is between giving back and giving? Is there a keeping score, or is that you say this is for humanity?
So as a good example is I do a ton of mentoring, and I've mentored high school kids to professionals. And I simply say to them, one of these days you will feel comfortable enough to ultimately pass on the knowledge that you've received. And therefore it's not necessarily a game that we want to play and how many people. It is, what is our impact on helping the future?
Awesome. Agreed. Great. Fantastic. So you've been with your firm for 13 years now. How many years have you been in the outdoor industry?
Probably 20 plus. I started out in the snowboard industry when I first moved to Colorado, went to the ski industry, lifestyle industry, and then ultimately started my own practice about 14 years ago.
Oh, 14 years ago. Okay. And so you've seen some changes within the industry. There's been some fairly significant. What do you believe has changed in the past decade, and why do you think it has happened?
I think the biggest is the inclusiveness. And what I mean by that is 10 years ago or 20 years ago, unless you skied, surfed, hiked the extreme, you were an outdoors person. You were not part of that club. And I think today, simply to be outside and enjoy what nature has, where we live, etc., is become very, very powerful to individuals and to brands. And so kind of wanting to quote my friends at Topo Designs, this is the new outdoor. This is the new stage in life of what we consider the outdoor is, how can you be now part of, you're included within this club now, which I think is really important.
I love looking at, I'm fascinated by the changes in generations. And perhaps you and I come from the generation of go deep in one, become an expert at one or a few, a handful. And if you look, each generation has a different style. And what I agree, the seen change is that you need to meet someone where they're at and with what their definition of outdoors is. The moment you step outside, regardless of what shoes you have on or what pack you're carrying, you are in the outdoors, which makes you in the outdoor industry. So how do we soften the edges? You know, fortunately in COVID, we welcomed many more individuals. How do we keep them in the outdoors? Yeah, wonderful. And so let's parallel that with your career. What pivotal changes have you seen?
What I've seen or what it's been pivotal to me has been, I made two career changes that became pivotal to what I do. I think first one was when I joined Spire and when I became their CFO, and I learned what a great team could accomplish. And, you know, we went from a well-known but smaller brand to a phenomenally successful international brand. And we had a very core team that thought together, understood. We argued, we fought, but it was a very meaningful way to drive a company into the next level and generations and things like that. And I think the next one for me was going out on my own. That was a pivotal place of, you know, jumping in with both feet saying, oh, I don't have a job. I have no money. But it made a huge impact because I chased a passion.
And in chasing the passion, that's how you decided to open your company?
You know, it started, I was going through a really, really difficult personal life. change. And I was in a really, really bad place, both physically and mentally. And I needed to do something that, honestly, being selfishly, I needed to take care of myself. And because I don't know where I was going to end up. And from that, I simply jumped in with both feet. I left a job I was at. I had no money. I had no clients. And it was like, oh, shit. Am I going to live out of my car? Am I going to be able to take care of, you know, whoever I needed to? And so it was very profound, but it also changed who I was. And it made me think a lot more, again, about the purpose, why I'm here, what I'm doing, what am I supposed to be doing for other people? So it was a very, very different role and a very jump from a lot of people.
What I know of you is that you choose to work with clients that light you up, and that where you know, per se, you are the end user. And I imagine that that comes from passion, values, and that works up the totem pole of purpose. And when you are choosing your clients, choosing your ideal clients, and cultivating them, nurturing them in the same fashion through this arc, it's joyful rather than a requirement.
Yeah. I have to believe in what they're doing. It's really important. I'm an ambassador. And unlike a lot of other, call it professionals, or especially finance professionals, I talk about my clients. I wear their product. I use their product. I'm an ambassador both within their four walls and outside of their four walls. And if I don't believe what they're doing and why they're doing it, it's really difficult for me to work for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. And so if we can flip that to stepping into the shoes of your client, what's it like to work with you? So I'm going off my own rails. You choose them because it serves you, it feeds you, and it serves your biggest purpose, the bigger purpose for humanity. And so as they choose you, in my opinion, you're not a traditional, you're very holistic in the way you work. And yet, as I said, you never know where conversations are going to go. So if we could be a fly on the wall of a client meeting, what's it like to work with Todd?
I think the first couple of
years, maybe. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah. No, no worries. When I first start talking with a potential client or what may be a client, there are a couple of things I say. One is I'm going to be completely blunt. I'm going to say what's on my mind. And I'm going to praise you when it's required, and I'm going to criticize you when it's required. And as long as you can accept both of those, we can work well because we'll have an open dialogue. But if you can't accept those, we're not going to be able to work well together at all. And secondly, I ask, what do you want to do when you grow up? And it may sound funny, and I get a lot of looks of, what the hell are you asking? But there are so many entrepreneurs who have great ideas, but don't know where they want to go. And so when I talk about growing up is, do you want to build a company for 3 years and sell it? Do you want to be Yvon Chouinard and build a company forever and have this huge legacy behind you? Or do you maybe want to build a home and put improvements and make it a great place and have a great life out of it? But ultimately, if you need to sell it, you can sell it. And so understanding where the entrepreneur wants to go with that, and there doesn't have to be, I want an answer, but the answer changes. And at least if I understand that, I can start putting my thoughts together to help them go in the direction, because each one of those processes and timelines have very, very different impacts on the business.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I find so interesting about you is I come from a lens of marketing. You come from a lens of finance and operations, is that every decision that we make has an impact on the back end of it. And making sure that foundation is there is so important. So it can look, you know, shiny and pretty from the outside. And you have the ability to look at those pieces and look at, give me some examples of like an efficiency of time spent.
The approach I take, The approach I take is everything that happens within the four walls of a business show up as a number. I'm a storyteller. I tell stories through numbers, but ultimately the numbers tell a story, but the operations are the meaning behind the story. And so as a marketing person, you're telling a story to a certain audience. As a finance person, I'm telling a story to an audience. My audience is simply different. And so my role, not as the traditional CFO, but more of this COO, et cetera, is I need to understand what's going on within the design department, the marketing department, the sales department. Because when I meet with the management team or I meet with investors or I meet with lenders, most of the time those people aren't there. I'm telling that story for them. And if I can understand what's happening, why is supply chain down? Why are we having a problem with the factory? Why is marketing spending X? I can tell that story and make sure people understand where the company's going. And I think it's simply, I produce a piece of paper. I produce a thought process. It's all about trust. How do I build trust with not only the team that I'm working with or the teams that I'm working with, but also those external, the lenders, the bankers, the other professionals, because my whole job is about trust.
Right. And I like your candor when you say in the beginning, I'm going to tell you the truth, straight shooter style is great, but that also has to come with trust. And as you build that, and as you're working with early stage and growth stage organizations, often those founders, those small teams are very much living day to day transactionally. And yet your job is to get them to think relationally and long-term. While you're working on today, really you're not just working on today, August 18th. When you're looking at things, what are you looking at?
Within the apparel industry is a great example. We are working on today. So we have certain transactions, we're dealing, customer experience, getting product out the door and so forth. But we're also pre-selling and getting ready and for marketing and other things for, call it 2023. But then the design department is actually thinking about 2024. So we're managing 3 years within 1 year. And for most people, things change with the logistics and so forth. But we ballpark say from conception to delivery of product or payment is about an 18-month time frame. So we have to think through those 18 months. And if we want to deliver something in spring of 24, what are we doing today to plan for that and get ready for it? But we also have to do it under the constraints of this year's budget, because every department is saying, ooh, the product people are saying, I need new tools because I'm focusing on 24. Or the sales department is saying, I need new tools because I'm focusing on 23. But then I'm coming back and say, how do we roll this into our 22 plan? Because this is all the money we have to spend. So it's choreographing those different aspects of many years within a business and then bringing it back to the current date.
Mm-hmm. That just gave me an aha moment of I don't recall the source, but a book that said entrepreneurs need to work with what they currently have rather than always saying, I need more tools, more resources, more dollars, until you can hit an apex where you actually have the funds, have the capital, have the revenue in order to buy more tools. Have you run into that problem with entrepreneurs, particularly in the early stage?
All the time. I hate to say it, cash is king. And if you don't have cash, you're not going to survive, or it's going to be hard. But so many entrepreneurs have this grandiose vision of, this is what I want to be. These are the sales I want in the future. And I'm going to start building my infrastructure today, even though I don't have those sales. And then find out all of a sudden those sales didn't come to fruition and I'm stuck with this massive overhead. And what do I do? And it's this panic that sets in and says, oh my God, can I make payroll tomorrow? What is my runway? Do I have enough cash to get to month one or month two or month three? What happens? I have to lay people off. What does that do to my culture? So there's this huge panic of an entrepreneur is ultimately an optimist at heart. They have to be in order to do their job, but they need to be brought tethered back in every once in a while and say, hey, here's what you're dealing with. Think of that great grandiose thing, but bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. I've often heard you say that you're required to act as a therapist at time, and sometimes you're on, you know, speed dial. How do you talk them off the ledge? And I just think of the many conversation I have of how can I do all this? My list is never ending. As you're working with a founder and you're trying to move them towards being a leader rather than being the doer all the time, what might that look like in terms of here's some tactile things, walk away with three things that how do you start? I mean, I know it's a loaded question, but some top of mind of how do you start to move from early stage? I had some sales, but I'm not allowing my company to scale into a position that allows them to scale.
I think part of the mentor role, and it really became very, very apparent during COVID or when COVID first started, and it was all of a sudden, oh my God, I have to shut down every store that I have, or my retailers are shutting down. I have no business. What do I do? And ultimately, look, I can be emotional at times, but I'm fairly calm overall. I have a very, you know, flat demeanor at times. And so it's, all right, we plan for today. And then we think when we wake up tomorrow morning, we have to talk again. And you have to talk down at times the entrepreneur who is completely panicking about their path that they wanted to take isn't happening. But I think one of the things that's truly important and I see a lot is the financial ability. And I guess I want to say financial training is huge. And the reason I got into what I'm doing now is because I saw a phenomenal amount of great entrepreneurs, but they were not necessarily business people. They didn't know finance. They didn't know operations. And I think one of the things that entrepreneurs can do is allow themselves to truly understand what a financial statement means. How do you read them? What stories do they tell? It's not just how much money I have in the bank, but what do those financials, what do those projections mean? And I think that's a lost art of an entrepreneur. And the more entrepreneur, and that's what I try and educate on, the more an entrepreneur can learn about what that looks like, the better off they're going to be as a leader because they can ask questions.
I'm envisioning the visual learner that I am, a really cool infographic that has a statement and has little bubbles out of, what does this mean? How does that work? Have you considered? Maybe we should do that together. That might be fun.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking today about the four types of learners and how, you know, you have to teach differently. Education is such a strong part of entrepreneurship. Yes. Okay. So if you can read the future, where do you see Todd Stockbauer Associates in that's 20 years, 10 years? Where are you headed? And just like you say to your clients, like you only have to own it for today. You're allowed to change your mind tomorrow. But as a leader, we need to plant a flag, own it, be committed to it until otherwise necessitated. So just for today, how does that feel?
I think your first question of where I'm going to be in 20 years, I'm going to be an old curmudgeon. I'm hoping someone will actually listen to me.
I highly doubt that.
I don't know what 20 years will bring. But I think, you know, I do go back to what you just asked and say, I keep asking myself, what do I want to do when I grow up? Mm-hmm. And I've been really fortunate. As you know, my life and my business are very, very intertwined. And I say this selfishly, I want to get paid to cycle and ski and eat and drink and travel. So those are my clients. And I'm very fortunate to have having built a practice around that. But what does that look like in 20 years? I'm not sure. I will always work because that's who I am. But I've learned to become more of a thinker than a doer. Mm-hmm. And I think what's important, again, I go back to the conscious capitalism and the education. I think it's truly important to teach people how to run a business profitably, but ultimately it's how can we take that profit that we've made and do good with it? And how can we teach people to do good with it? Is it a social impact cause that you want to be part of? Is it a sustainability? Is it an education side? What is that? I believe you can truly do good both from a for-profit and a non-for-profit, because I've had these arguments with people on nonprofits. And to me, simply a nonprofit is, it's a tax code. There's no reason a nonprofit can't make a lot of money, because if they make money, that means they have more to do with. And a lot of people say, oh, we're a nonprofit, we don't need to make money. That's a foolish aspect, because that means you're barely surviving and ultimately you're not helping the people that you want to help in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say more revenue, more impact. It's that quadruple bottom line. And we know that businesses grow at an accelerated pace when they have the model of the quadruple bottom line, the integration of the purpose. Yes, and you make sure that the anchors of the revenue, the profit are there as well. So great. So it doesn't, I mean, if I were to suspect 20 years from now, you would still be mentoring. You would still be riding. I could likely find you in a hub of outdoor industry, because that's what lights you up and that's where you know you make an impact. I would
agree with that. There will be something there, you know, be it working board, advisory board, etc. I will always be engaged in this, because this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was asked by a leader, who are you becoming? And that initially I was thought, well, that's a strange question. But what I realized is it's far more intriguing to look into the future and say, you know, yes, we have our bio, we have our credentials, but what is much more is intriguing to me is the opportunities that lie ahead. And to say, you know, I can't control it, but I can align with who I am and what I'm committed to. And that pulls that gap closer. You know, you don't have to wait till you're 80 to be living a life of leisure and still, you know, making an impact. It can happen now. And one of the things I suspect about you is that frequently you're already there. You're already doing those things. It might be a reduced pace.
No, it probably will be, but you bring up a good point about entrepreneurs. And I'm a huge fan of advisory boards. I think entrepreneurs tend to be in a silo, especially sole entrepreneurs, someone who started out of their own or maybe one other partner. And having been able to surround yourself with a group of experienced entrepreneurs or business people that you can pick their brain and learn from their experiences is hugely important to entrepreneurs. And so that would be one of the things I will continue to do, because the experiences I've had, both good and bad, I think it's hugely important to helping that and educating that individual to their next phase of maturation.
Great, wonderful. So we're gonna start to wrap it up. I have what I call rapid fire questions. These are, you know, off the cuff response. Just tell me what comes top of mind. What was your last outdoor adventure?
I rode yesterday for a couple of hours on my road bike.
Okay, outside, were you, what kind of, our listeners don't know your environment. What was it? What were you seeing?
I live in Lafayette near Boulder County in Boulder County. And so I've got a couple of roads, but then take me on a more country road, and it's more rolling hills that I can get in an hour and a half ride. I can be in the middle of nowhere on the road bike, which is very nice. And then be back home, you know, ready for the next Zoom call, etc.
Right. So that's your backyard ride. Just get out there.
That's my backyard ride.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And how about a top of mind nonprofit?
Two come to mind that I've worked. Well, what I'm working with now is COMBA, which is Colorado Mountain Bike Association. And we're all about educating people about trails, mountain biking, building trails, being conscious about the environment. So I've been on their board for about 3 years and we'll continue that. The other one I worked on for a long time was Team Summit Colorado. And although it is primarily a ski team, snowboard team, et cetera, a lot of it had to do with educating kids around a mountain lifestyle and how could they balance work and school and being an athlete at the same time? And ultimately, how do they graduate to get to that next level?
Mm-hmm. Some great time management skills within. It's a different lifestyle in the mountains. That's great. Wonderful. And how about a book or podcast that's applicable to the outdoors?
There's actually a couple of them. And one is obviously Let My People Go Surfing, which is Yvon Chouinard, which is a phenomenal book on building culture. Another one is Black Little Stretchy Pants. Although not necessarily outdoor industry, it's the building of Lululemon and how they built a culture of how people worked anywhere from the people on the board of directors to people working the register. And when you buy something at Lulu, you get that bag with sayings. Those are all sayings that came up within different conversations within the retail stores and things like that. And then, so those are really important from a cultural perspective. And then there's two books from a business, not necessarily outdoors, but very profound. One is Shoe Dog, which is Phil Knight and how he built Nike. And the other one is Unlabeled by Mark Echo, who built Echo Brands. And it shows two very distinct paths of how people built billion-dollar companies. And Phil Knight wanted to be the small fish in the big pond and took on money, took on experience, took on people. Mark Echo wanted to do everything himself and didn't want to take on people to do it and ultimately had to. So I think they're two very unique business books that allow people to understand there are different paths to get to where you want to go.
Wonderful. Thanks for adding three books to my bedstand. Now I got what? Great. Yes. Great reading. And tell our listeners, I know about you read avidly and you have a routine of it. So I think it's interesting how some is within the industry and some is intentionally outside of it. So what's your reading routine?
I wake up every morning and have my chocolate milk and you know what? There's something comforting about, and it goes back to having kids. There's something comfort. I sit on my couch or I sit outside on my deck. And the first thing I do is I read every morning. I read for half an hour and that's my business reading. And I read anything from true business books to some of the books I described. I read about culture. I read about self-improvement because ultimately it's my way of educating myself and being able to add value to the entrepreneurs and people I work with. I come up with tidbits all the time of, have we thought about this? Are you doing this, etc. So it's my way, again, of educating myself, but also giving back. So every morning, 5 days a week, I probably end up reading 2 to 3 hours a week just on business of doing that.
Awesome. And in the evening, you read for pleasure.
I read for pleasure. And that goes everywhere. And we won't get into the list of highs and lows and dark places, etc. But I read, honestly, anything I can get my hands on, I read.
Mm-hmm. Well, my point of that is that you do turn off work and that there is a time to rest. And that is another way of fueling your brain. I think of the hard work that we do during the day, very strategic oriented, you need to be focused. And so to have that off time is equally crucial.
I agree with you 100%. I think for me, you know, it is reading, but it's also, I look at it, it's the bike. It's the skis, it's the hiking. If I don't get outside, and maybe I can't do it every day, but if I can get outside and ride for an hour, or I can go for a hike, that actually is as important to me mentally as it is physically. And knowing what I do and what the clients that I'm dealing with, and sometimes they're great moments and sometimes they're not great moments, I have to re-energize myself or it's not gonna work.
Right. Put your mask on first.
Absolutely.
Yes. Great. Wonderful. So Todd, tell us how we can find you.
Well, as you said earlier, I'm like a Sphinx and I'm really, really hard to find. But one, my LinkedIn profile tells a little bit about my story, but if you want to reach me at Todd@StockBauerAssociates.com, you know, I'm willing to share a beer. I'm willing to share a coffee and chat and tell you about my experiences.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I will put all these great resources in the show notes. Thanks for joining me today. Always great to spend some time with you.
Thank you, Claire. I greatly appreciate it. I truly enjoyed it.